You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
I gotta be careful. The Majority Report
with Sam Steeder. It is Monday, March 20th. 2023. My name is Sam Seder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Trump claims his arrest is imminent in the city of New York. Once his home, now his end. We'll see. In Georgia, meanwhile, though, Atlanta area prosecutors consider racketeering and conspiracy charges against Trump for his Georgia election case. Also, today marks 20 years. 20 years ago, shock and awe levied against Iraq as the start of an illegal invasion and occupation, which lasted over a decade, well over a decade. Senate may vote this week to rescind the Iraq war authorization. Unclear what will happen in the House. UBS agrees to buy Credit Suisse. Biden calls for an increase in regulatory power. Mulls a rollback of the Dodd-Frank rollback. Wyoming outlaws abortion pills. The IPCC releases the final part of its sixth assessment. Scientists say it's now or never on maintaining or preventing a 1.5 Celsius rise. It's probably gone. Florida, a bill allowing any parent to ban any school book passes a Florida legislative committee. Macron's government faces a no-confidence vote on his proposed hike to retirement. Howard Schultz quits Starbucks in a bid to avoid Senate testimony.
Scared of Bernie.
Mm-hmm. President Xi arrives in Moscow, and it's confirmed, more or less, just as Nixon's sank the Paris-Vietnamese talks, Reagan told Iran to hold on to the hostages to help his election. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Beginning of another week. A lot of people, Emma Vigeland here, obviously,
yes.
Co-host of this program. A lot of people very excited about the idea of Donald Trump being indicted this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun for the story. Does it help him or hurt him in a Republican primary? I feel like it's kind of a wash.
It's probably a wash. I have no idea.
I don't think the funny thing is, though, is he's concerned.
Yeah.
He's one of the people excited by it.
Nobody wants to go to jail.
No.
It seems to me. And I don't know. He could. I mean, I don't know. He could theoretically go to jail. I don't know that the Manhattan district attorney or, for that matter, the Georgia state attorney have the same rules regarding interfering with an election that the U.S. Justice Department has.
Mm-hmm. I already announced I'm running. You can't do that.
But he seems to be worried about it. We'll go into this a decent amount today. Tomorrow, we're working on a guest, right? We don't know yet if we have him. We do have him to talk a little bit more about the anniversary of the Iraq War. We had another guest scheduled for today that fell through at the last minute, so forgive us in that way. We will talk a little bit about that, obviously, also in the IPCC report. I also want to talk a little bit about the story about the
Iran hostages, because that is a story that, you know, we have known through different sources over the time, and there's been speculation about it. But it, to the extent that one can confirm such a thing with so many of the people involved dead, there seems to be some confirmation. But let's go right in on this. Donald Trump. I mean, I went into like a liquor store the other day, and it, for some reason, like I would say 90% of the liquor stores I go into, there's somebody who watches the show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, but
good people.
Good. All good people, of course. And but they were like all the people in the liquor store were talking about whether Trump was going to be indicted on Tuesday.
I think for a lot of people, it's just like they've been hearing about how he's so corrupt and crooked for this whole time period that there's a cathartic element to it. But I don't know how much this hurts him electorally.
Right. I don't. Well, I think it's also, I mean, these aren't, the thing is that the payments to Stormy Daniels, not the most relevant of the things that he did, I think, that were criminal. But, you know, it's sort of, there's an Al Capone quality to this, right? You get him for not paying his taxes.
Which is funny, too, because when it comes to the Georgia probe, it looks like they're pursuing RICO charges, which is exactly what Giuliani was using in New York to go after the mob. So now could be turned on his buddy, potentially Giuliani, too.
And I will say this, too, that Georgia is far more irrelevant, it seems to me. You really, as a president, shouldn't be interfering with the election counting in that way. But here is former President Trump announcing on Truth Social Saturday that he thinks he's going to be arrested on Tuesday, tomorrow, of this week. And you know it's he's exercised by this because all caps.
Yeah.
Now, illegal leaks from a corrupt and highly political Manhattan District Attorney's Office, which has allowed new records to be set in violent crime.
What? Records.
New records.
I mean, number one, baby.
Records in the sense that they're only records if you don't look at, like, the olden days.
Yes. As a part of, like, a record in the past downward trend over the past few decades in New York. It's a little bit higher.
I mean, look, I think, to be fair, there's new records every day.
Yeah.
Like they record things. It just isn't.
There's not superlative.
No. Oh, gotcha.
He dropped the part about breaking any records. It's just new records. We take records every day. How many people were arrested today? That's a record. We've recorded also what the temperature is today. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's a
new record temperature today.
New records to be set in violent crime. News leader is funded by George Soros. There we go. Indicate that with no crime being able to be proven and based on an old and fully debunked by numerous other prosecutors, fairy tale, the far and away leading Republican candidate and former president of the United States of America will be arrested on Tuesday of next week. Protest. Take our nation back. And, how many likes did he get on that? Like 25?
How many truths or how many truths?
The all caps kind of it hurts his emphasis and it makes it a little bit harder to read the syntax of something that's that big of a block of text.
I don't it's think his followers are they see all caps and they go, "We're angry now."
Here's what do we have here? Here's number two, right? Oh yeah, here's okay. This is these are all of the things from Trump's from Truth Social that he did on that day. Okay, you get like 30,000 people. Remember the same animals and thugs. Oh wait. So I should start from the bottom, actually, right?
Right.
16 hours ago, and go to the next one. See if it, like what's. Yeah. Okay. Start from the bottom. This is what we'll do. I find it very hard to believe that a racist Soros-backed DA.
So he's black, so that's why he's racist against white people?
Well, he's going after
a white guy.
He's going after a white guy. Remember, this is also the guy. It's not illegal, although I would. It would have been nice if it was. Who put a full-page ad in the New York Times, was it? I think it was, about the Central Park Five, who were exonerated after decades in prison. Put an ad against them, you know, basically calling them animals and that they should be arrested. I find it very hard to believe that the racist Soros-backed DA who lets murderers, rapists, and drug dealers walk free and who has presided over the biggest violent crime wave in the history of NYC.
Nope.
Yeah, no.
Well, you know,
you might want to ask Giuliani about
what do you mean by biggest? What do you mean by wave? Is using the power of his office to persecute, indict, and prosecute a former president of the United States of America for no crime. The witch hunt never ends, but we will make America great again.
Are you sure?
An hour later, Jess reported that the most important witness to go before the New York City grand jury, a highly respected lawyer who once represented convicted felon, jailbird, and serial fake storyteller and liar, Michael Cohen.
So the highly respected part was sarcastic, yeah. But it's just not clear to Matt's point. Okay.
No, wait a second. No. You're misreading it.
Oh God, I mean.
Yeah, no, it's hard.
How could
it's
I
hard.
Confuse?
Okay. Just reported that the most important witness to go before the New York City grand jury, a highly respected lawyer, comma, other people, there's no comma there, okay. But there should be, who once represented convicted felon, jailbird, and serial fake storyteller and liar, Michael Cohen.
Okay.
Will be doing so tomorrow afternoon. The information he will present will supposedly be conclusive and irrefutable. Witch hunt. So... What he's trying to say here is that this guy Costello, who at one point might have represented or was contemplating representing Michael Cohen in 2018, but ended up just representing the Republican Party or Trump. He wore a lot of hats. This guy Costello is going to testify, theoretically, could today. That Michael Cohen is a bad guy, liar. And apparently, Trump says supposedly, because he's not supposed to have in any way probably conferred with a witness who is going to go in. I mean, they called this witness, but in the case of the grand jury, at least in New York City, if an indictment seems to be imminent, a grand jury will allow the subject of a grand jury to call a witness in their defense to perhaps, you know, testify. They don't get there to ask questions, if I understand correctly, I don't think. But they will call the witness. And the idea of this witness is to impeach the testimony of Michael Cohen. Now, Trump can't possibly know this because he probably wouldn't want to get involved in witness tampering. Although one could argue that all of that what he's doing now and what the Republican Party is doing.
Oh, yes.
Is obstruction of justice as they go after the DA. But nevertheless, Trump only supposedly knows that this information will be conclusive and irrefutable.
Irrefutable.
That's what a birdie told me.
And then 4 hours later, remember, same animals and thugs that would do this to perhaps 200 million people. But actually all Americans.
Sorry, what is that? What's
okay,
going on
I'll
there?
Explain what that is. He thinks like he's saying that the animals and thugs that are doing this, that I guess is the
Black DA
of New
Black Democrats,
is doing this to 200 people in America who... 200, in his mind, 200 million people voted for him or supported him as the president. And then he reconsiders it in the next following clause. But I mean by not just 200 million, actually all Americans. He's doing it to all Americans.
Yeah. So because you are all so, me. This could happen to you.
So about 2/3 of Americans like Trump and then another third.
Well, at first he's saying 200 million, 2/3 of Americans like Trump. And then he goes, but actually all Americans.
So that other 131 million, that you're also included in the 200.
Right.
Add that onto the 200.
Right. So he's saying, remember, the same animals and thugs that would do this to perhaps 200 million, but actually, no, all Americans, whatever that number is.
We go on, we go all. Could have just gone
straight to all any Americans.
Yes, to all Americans. But what clearly happened is he was like, I don't want to have to look up how many Americans there are. Yeah, so let's just say it's got to be all Americans.
Yeah, I don't want to politicize this.
Are the communists, Marxists, rhinos, and losers that are purposely destroying our country? So there's a two-part project. One is to do the thing to the president and then to then purposely ruin the country. And then,
Jesus,
like, I guess 6 hours after his first Truth Social, can you imagine the great New York City Police Department, correctly referred to as New York City's finest?
Needs an editor.
Who, for the first in... This is like reading the Twitter files.
It's like Proust syntax over here.
Who, for the first and only time in history, endorsed a president, me, and honored me as man of the year, having to defend and protect the defunders and cop haters of the radical left that want to put their greatest champion and friend in prison for a crime that doesn't exist.
Yeah, so he's trying to get the cops in New York on all the side, too?
The while, the Soros-backed DA allows murderers and other violent criminals to freely roam the sidewalks of New York.
You know, sidewax.
The one things I will say this, the sidewax of New York.
I didn't notice that.
I didn't notice he misspelled that. But the one thing I will say about the murderers and other violent criminals in this city, they may be murderers, they may be violent criminals, not jaywalkers.
No.
They are on the sidewax of New York.
It shows like that Trump is like only ever around those people, like from the door to the car.
Yeah.
Like the sidewalk.
I see him.
Sidewalk's scary.
I look to my left, I look to my right, and I can see them down the sidewalk.
A lot of danger there.
And then
on the sidewalk all the time.
An hour later, it is the district attorney of Manhattan who is breaking the law by using the fake and fully discredited testimony, even by the SDNY, of a convicted liar, felon, and jailbird, Michael Cohen, to incredibly persecute, prosecute, and indict a former president, and now leading, by far, presidential candidate for a crime that doesn't exist. Alvin Bragg should be held accountable for the crime of interference in a presidential election.
They heard that about Russia. Just never let it go.
There you go.
Well, he's trying to rile up his supporters, right? That's what he thinks is that is almost a legal tool for him.
Doesn't he say like people should rally?
Yeah.
Wasn't there another tweet of him saying like,
come out?
But I think at one point they also said like surround. What did he want to do? Like surround City Hall so nobody can get in there or something.
He wants to use that as at his disposal because it's an intimidation tactic when he gets his supporters all riled up. He feels like this is fair game for him, you know, to avoid any kind of real prosecution.
Well, I wonder if it isn't considered like in any way trying to influence the grand jury in particular. I mean, like if you're on a grand jury, do you really want to be responsible for igniting, you know, a civil war? I will tell you, I don't think it's going to ignite a civil war.
No.
I think that the number of people who come out in an attempt to surround City Hall will not be able to be enough to even like block one of its entrances.
Yeah.
Well, they're stretched too thin because a lot of them are protesting drag shows right now. So
it is tough. They've got a lot of things to do around the country. Do we have that tweet?
Also, guarantee it's just not good. I not guarantee. I don't know. But it would be funny if it just doesn't happen Tuesday and he gets everyone all riled up for it. And then it happens another time where they can't be protesting.
I don't think it's
going to
be Tuesday. Do we have that or no?
They're pushing. His supporters are pushing what they're calling a patriot
to surround Mar-a-Lago so that they can't arrest him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The Patriot Moat. That's what it was.
Right. Protest, take our nation back. Yeah.
But he didn't call for that.
Yeah.
No, I actually don't want you around Mar-a-Lago. Let's not do it in Mar-a-Lago.
Little close.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of tweets. So he might have said that, but like on other all caps, they're killing our nation as we sit back and watch. We must save America. Protest, protest, protest.
Yeah.
I mean, just
no peaceful in
hysterics
there.
Hysterics right now from Trump.
But not at Mar-a-Lago. Let's not. I don't want people.
I'm not saying.
Hey, it's not like I don't want you at Mar-a-Lago. It's just that I don't want you at Mar-a-Lago.
Not in Palm Beach.
When he's saying we're sitting back, he's like, you guys are all sitting down. Why aren't people storming the Capitol again or something?
Yeah, right.
Everybody up. John Carl hosted Mike Pence on ABC's This Week to ask the former vice president about Trump's post on Truth Social. I don't know why they do interviews like this, but I guess
sitting facing each other in chairs?
No, like why are they in the middle of a mall?
Yeah, right. Honestly, looks like they're gonna do a beer tasting,
like a beer flight.
Yeah.
When did Mike Pence sort of like morph, like borrow Donald Trump's body? Like it's just sort of like he's getting,
yeah,
he's like, it looks like from the side, put that up. It looks like he's like,
he's,
I don't know,
boxy.
I'm going to, yeah.
DeSantis is doing this.
I think he's wearing a bomb or something.
Right. They're like doing suits that fit them poorly because it makes them look bigger or something, but it's just not going well.
Here is Mike Pence on the potential that Donald Trump could be indicted by a grand jury.
I'm sure you've seen Donald Trump is saying that he's going to be indicted on Tuesday. He's calling for people to protest. Now, we don't know if that's true. Matt and DA has not said anything about it. But he's calling for people to protest. Is that irresponsible?
Well, first, let me say I'm taken aback at the idea of indicting a former president.
Pause
of the
it.
Let me just say that I
want to play both sides of this, so that I don't alienate any of President Trump's supporters.
If you'd let me finish, John.
Okay, go ahead.
It's a concerned face.
Protest. Is that irresponsible?
Well, first, let me say I'm taken aback at the idea of indicting a former president of the United States at a time when there's a crime wave in New York City, that the fact that the Manhattan DA thinks that indicting President Trump is his top priority, I think, just tells you everything you need to know about the radical left in this country. It just feels like a politically charged prosecution here. And I, for my part, I just feel like it's just not what the American people want to see. We got.
Let it play out. I mean, this guy, first off, he's doing his, what? Do we don't have anything else from that? George W. Bush. He's doing his best George W. Bush. And he also like literally read off the tweet that Trump put out there. Radical left, crime wave, and I will say this, in middle America, they think that there is this massive crime wave in New York.
It's crazy.
I met like some people on that that Nation cruise who are not on the Nation. They were the cruise has a bunch of people outside the Nation that buys just a certain amount of tickets, and they said, you know, we love New York. We went and visited about 4 or 5 years ago, but we would never go now.
Yeah.
I'm like, why?
No, well, I mean,
because isn't it dangerous? And I'm like, wait, what? What are you talking about? No, it's not dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, just like to put numbers to it, South Bend murders per 100,000 27.4, Indianapolis per 100,000 24.3, New York City 5.5.
Wow.
Like, and this is like, this is so common. When I call home, I talk to my grandma. She's like, you feel safe? Every single time. She's like, you walk into work? Like, yeah, I every single day. You feel safe? Yeah, I feel safe. Like, I'm not.
That's what it was like. I mean, that's what people, the 80s, their maybe. Attitude was in the 80s, in the 90s, early 90s. And then it changed in the late 90s. And then, you know, after 9/11, people liked New York again. And now it is back to this sort of like myth that there is like some type of intense danger.
But it's wild because crime.
We more or no? From that? Crime. More of that clip?
Yeah.
Pop that up. Just want to see where he goes after basically reiterating Trump's tweets, like literally.
They can't do anything else, right? Because they have to have it both ways.
Yeah. I such trouble with that. Mm.
Concerned face.
Yeah, concerned faced. Really? Okay, go ahead.
And I, for my part, just feel like it's just not what the American people want to see. We got real challenges in this country today, John. People are facing record inflation.
Pause it for 1 second. We got real challenges you know, the Manhattan DA should be dealing with inflation.
Yeah, did you see what they're
and the Manhattan DA should be dealing with, you know, what are we going to do in Ukraine?
What are they teaching about Rosa Parks?
And what about, you know, what? Yeah, where are we going to? I mean, remember, he's talking about the Manhattan DA. Go ahead.
Not what the American people want to see. We got real challenges in this country today, John. People are facing record inflation, a crisis at our border. We have war in Eastern Europe. The American people are anxious about the future. And here we go again. Back into another politically charged prosecution directed at the former president of the United States. And I would just hope for better.
But he's calling on people to protest, to come out and protest, take our nation back. We know what happened the last time he said that.
What? What happened?
The American people have a constitutional right to peaceably assemble.
Absolutely, but to have a former president calling on people to protest justice proceeding.
The frustration the American people feel.
All right, let's forget this. I mean, this guy, the profile and cowardice.
Yeah, what's the follow-up, too? The follow-up should also just be...
January 6th? Why?
I'm not sure when this happened, but it also should be... he should ask him about Georgia. Did he ask him about Georgia? No? I don't know.
It's a half-hour clip.
I don't know, John. Right. I just, it's amazing. It's amazing how cowardly, like, you know, I mean, because look, the bottom line is it's Donald Trump's party. Yeah. Republican, the Republicans have their leader and everybody else is just vying to be it. They all still know it. Here's Ron DeSantis asked about Trump's indictment. And it's the exact same thing. He's reading off of Donald Trump's Truth Social tweets, too.
From the Florida Standard, we wanted to know what your thoughts are on the rumored Trump indictment and if you have any role in it.
Say one thing here, too, that is interesting? You know, he's got the backdrop. Keep it up. He's got the backdrop to project that he's, you know, going to be he's presidential, right? Like the American flag, the Florida seal, and he's there in front of the podium. And you know, the problem the guy has is that honestly, he looks like the spokesperson for the guy who's running for president.
Mm-hmm.
He does not fill out the frame.
Yeah, he has like henchman vibes.
He's an advanced guy.
Yeah, exactly. Testing. Just want to make sure. I mean, you actually like think
one,
he's
two,
like,
three.
Go, like just want just checking him this mic. Can you guys hear me in the back? Okay. And the person coming out to deliver the press conference will be out in just a moment. All right. Okay. And you can hear me in the back. Okay. Good. Here we go.
Standard. We wanted to know what your thoughts are on the rumored Trump indictment and if you have any role in it. If charges are brought on him, will you have any role in extradition to New York?
I've seen rumors swirl. I have not seen any facts yet, and so I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. The Manhattan district attorney is a Soros-funded prosecutor. And so he, like other Soros-funded prosecutors, they weaponize their office to impose a political agenda on society at the expense of the rule of law and public safety. He has downgraded over 50% of the felonies to misdemeanors. He says he doesn't want to even have jail time for the vast, vast majority of crimes. And what we've seen in Manhattan is we've seen the crime rate go up, and we've seen citizens become less safe. And so you're talking about this situation with, and look, I don't know what goes into paying hush money to a porn star to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I can't speak to that. But what I can speak to,
I would never
is
say
that
this
if thing. You have a prosecutor who is ignoring crimes happening every single day in his jurisdiction, and he chooses to go back many, many years ago to try to use something about porn star hush money payments, you know, that's an example of pursuing a political agenda and weaponizing the office. And I think that that's fundamentally wrong.
Ooh, he tried to slip in a little dig there while parroting everything Trump had already said.
Well, I was too busy hanging out with porn stars. You were too busy force feeding detainees with Ensure, I guess, Ryan. So, yeah, you wouldn't know nothing about that, would you?
Run to Gitmo.
This is going to be a fun campaign between these two.
Yeah.
The case with Trump, we just don't know. Like, you know, we're not going to see a perp walk. If he does get indicted, which it sounds like he might, I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow, although it could. They could issue it. They could hear the testimony today from Costello. And to refute Michael Cohen's testimony. And then tomorrow they could announce it. We shall see.
I don't think the lane of trying to say exactly what Trump wants you to say about his potential arrest while also criticizing him, having it both ways. I'm just not sure that's going to be valuable.
It's a funny dance because I saw like Blake Masters say like this is a brazen travesty of justice or whatever, right? Using language like that, and it's like I saw that's a performance for the base, and I also think they all hope that he goes down for it,
without a doubt. He'd be thrilled.
Crocodile tears. That's what I say.
You have fake friends, and I can tell.
I knew it from the start.
Crocodile DeSantis. today marks the 20th anniversary of Shock and Awe. For you youngins, there was a buildup. It's very hard to describe what was going on at this time in this country. In the years following 9/11, there was a very sort of like clear march to war in Iraq that started about a year earlier, early in 2002, I should say. Jeez. And it was quite clear they were trying to build a case against Iraq. It's amazing. The New York Times had a piece like, why did we go to war in Iraq? And there is no telling of the march to war to New York, to Iraq, without including multiple aspects of the New York Times.
Yes.
We're all trying to find the guy who did this.
Right, right. Or just the Spider-Man meme.
The first element in which the New York Times was involved and partially responsible for the Iraq War was the reporter, one of their reporters, Judy Miller, was reporting on national security. One of her sources was Scooter Libby, who was the chief of staff for Dick Cheney. Cheney and Rumsfeld were going over to the CIA and basically telling them, we want all of the intelligence you have that could in any way implicate Iraq with 9/11. And there just wasn't much. And what they did is the way that intelligence is amassed is you take in all of the, everything.
It's a dragnet.
It's a dragnet. And then you sift through it, find the most credible, essentially narrative to come out of all this stuff. And part of it is assessing where the intel came from, who's behind it, what is their purpose, why would they tell the truth or why would they lie if it was, you know, human intelligence, if it was physical intelligence. And they essentially stovepiped it right to Cheney and Rumsfeld. And they basically left out anything that would contradict, basically gave raw intelligence to the White House, the vice president's office. And that's like basically saying VAERS is going to be the way that we measure the dangerousness of a vaccine, let's say. We're not going to vet any of the information. We're just, every time somebody says they got injured by a vaccine, we're just going to take it at face value and we're going to pass it along and say that's what the intel is. They also went as far as creating a separate intelligence agency in the Defense Department to further give them more of this intel. So it wasn't so much as an intelligence gathering operation as much as it was a sort of propaganda building operation. Judith Miller was told by her source, Scooter Libby, that Iraq had nuclear capability. And then she reports this, writes it up dutifully, and then Dick Cheney goes on the next weekend on To Meet the Press and says, it's not just us.
New York Times.
The New York Times believes this too. But the reporting came from Dick Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody said a word about it. That was on the reporting side. Judy Miller ends up going to jail to protect Scooter Libby, who outed the CIA agent whose husband was sent to Niger to check on these claims of yellow cake uranium that supposedly were sold to Iraq. He came back, said, did not happen. Wrote a piece about it. Valerie Plame, his wife at the time, was outed as a CIA agent, career ruined because she had, because her husband essentially had the audacity to refute this claim. Scooter Libby ultimately pardoned for that act by Bush. And, or was it his sentence was commuted? Either way, he was...
Trump pardoned him.
Was it Trump pardoned him? Oh, okay. His sentence was commuted, I think, by Bush. I don't know how much time he had to serve. I don't know that he had served any time. And then the other element that the New York Times contributed was on the opinion pages, where Thomas Friedman, who at that time, nobody pays attention to him anymore, but at that time was probably the sine qua non for when it came to liberal voices of reason, that liberals who didn't really follow the news, Democrats who didn't really follow the news, but, you know, occasionally would dip into NPR. They basically took his word for it. And he came out strong in favor of attacking Iraq. And his idea was about democracy and whatnot as he was writing about these things. He was mocking the French. I specifically remember a column of mocking the French for dragging their feet on this, like in to the point where, you know, Congress, Republicans in Congress were calling them freedom fries in the Republican in the cafeteria in the House. But it was amazing.
And also, we should say, too, I mean, the Democrats in power at that time, who were also in favor of the war, Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, still pretty important names, right? For the Democratic, I mean, Biden's the president.
Yeah, of course.
But like, it was widespread. And those Democratic power players still very much power players within the Democratic Party.
And Russ Feingold, I think we had on last year at this time. Maybe it was on 9/11. Specifically remembers sitting in the Senate caucus room with people, I think he's referring to Clinton and Kerry, talking about how they did not believe that Iraq was involved anyway in 9/11, and then went out and voted to authorize or to give, they supposedly didn't authorize the war, they just gave the president the authority to wage war.
Sure.
That's supposedly what they had said at the time. But here is Thomas Friedman, just 2 months after shock and awe, when there was some sense of like, oh my God, we are victors. There wasn't as much candy and flowers as we anticipated. They had to sort of stage the pulling down of the Saddam Hussein statue in Baghdad. But here is Friedman summing up why we had to ultimately kill, at this time we hadn't killed that many, but depending on whose numbers you believe, I think the AP says around 150,000 innocent civilians. The Lancet says somewhere around 650,000 innocent civilians. I've seen figures as far north as a million. I've seen Defense Department numbers that were in the hundreds of thousands, if I remember correctly. At least contemporaneous or, you know, closer to those times. I don't know if they show that anymore. And here is Thomas Friedman's justifying that.
Now that the war is over. And
pause it.
Difficult.
Understand, this is in 2003. May of 2003. Almost April 1st. Almost June 1st. And these guys are convinced the war is over. They missed it by over a dozen years.
Now that the war is over and there's some difficulty with the peace, was it worth doing?
Well, I think it was unquestionably worth doing, Charlie. And I think that looking back, I now certainly feel I understand more what the war was about. And it's interesting to talk about it here in Silicon Valley, because I think looking back at the 1990s, I can identify that there were actually three bubbles of the 1990s. There was the NASDAQ bubble. There was the corporate governance bubble. And lastly, there was what I would call the terrorism bubble. And the first two were based on creative accounting. The last was based on moral creative accounting. The terrorism bubble that basically built up over the 1990s said, flying airplanes into the World Trade Center, that's okay. Wrapping yourself with dynamite and blowing up Israelis in a pizza parlor, that's okay. Because we're weak and they're strong and the weak have a different morality. Having your preachers say that's okay, that's okay. Having your charities raise money for people who do these kinds of things, that's okay. And having your press call people who do these kind of things martyrs, that's okay. And that built up as a bubble, Charlie. And 9/11 to me was the peak of that bubble. And what we learned on 9/11 in a gut way was that that bubble was a fundamental threat to our open society. Because there is no wall high enough, no INS agent smart enough, no metal detector efficient enough to protect an open society from people motivated by that bubble. And what we needed to do was go over to that part of the world, I'm afraid, and burst that bubble. We needed to go over there, basically, take out a very big stick, right in the heart of that world, and burst that bubble. And there was only one way to do it. Because part of that bubble said, we've got you. This bubble is actually going to level the balance of power between us and you, because We don't care about life. We're ready to sacrifice, and all you care about are your stock options and your Hummers. And what they needed to see was American boys and girls going house to house from Basra to Baghdad and basically saying, which part of this sentence don't you understand? You don't think, you know, we care about our open society? You think this bubble fantasy, we're just going to let it grow? Well, suck on this. Okay. That, Charlie, was what this war was about. We could have hit Saudi Arabia. It was part of that bubble. Could have hit Pakistan. We hit Iraq because we could. That's the real truth. And the message.
I love the honesty. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Suck on this. And we did it because we could. We killed hundreds of thousands of people, created millions of internal and external refugees, the greatest refugee crisis probably in 100 years or 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, since World War II, we should say, because we could.
What a sophisticated thinker, you know. Everything's a bubble, right? There's this bubble of thought within the Muslim community that we might have, I don't know, some extremist elements that respond to United decades of U.S. imperial will and power. And we can't go after Saudi Arabia because that's against our geopolitical interests, even though obviously their role in 9/11 is pretty well documented. We got to go after Iraq because, you know, during the Gulf War, we decimated their infrastructure. We bombed them, already killed tens of thousands, and they were a bit more vulnerable. And so Saddam Hussein, they'd wanted to go after them for him for a while. And so we can go after Iraq. We can't go after Saudi Arabia.
And let's be clear. I mean, it was the only thing he's leaving out there is that the other part of the reason why we wanted to do this was because I think the theory was that we were going to inhibit China's ability ultimately to get the oil from Iraq. That was the project for all of those, like Project for a New American Century people. That was the project for the Cheneys, was to inhibit, not necessarily to get cheap oil for us. We don't get our oil from the Middle East, incidentally. We don't. It was to make sure that we had hegemony over that oil, so that if China got it, it was under our terms. Now, of course, the whole thing was a complete failure, even on its own terms. Iran largely has a tremendous amount of influence on Iraq at this point. Although, I don't know. I would imagine Cheney would say, like, no, it was a success. We just created a bunch of low-level conflicts. We don't really care about ISIS. They can't really do anything. We have that hegemony over the oil, and we will always have that hegemony over the oil. And that's the only thing that really, ultimately, at the end, counts. The other stuff was all, you know.
And defense contractors got rich, too, during the process.
Yes, Halliburton in particular. But I think geopolitically, Cheney got what he wanted. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. Although, you know, let's do one more.
It reminds me of there's this clip of from 5 to 2001, politically incorrect, Bill Maher. Also has Chris Hitchens, Gene Simmons, Dennis Prager, and Whoopi Goldberg on it. But Maher says this crazy thing. It's the same thing he says there, but about Vietnam, saying we needed to show the commies basically that we were the powerful ones. And so it could have been wherever, but it was Vietnam. And it's like, that is a strain of thinking that, like, it's weird to see it elaborated publicly, but you know that it's going on behind the scenes.
Hitchens was very much supportive of that war for the sake of the Kurds.
Right. Speaking of the Iraq war, yeah, exactly.
But let's also remember that we were told time and time again that it was about weapons of mass destruction. And here's how seriously George Bush took that. This is from, what was the data on this?
It's the 2004 White House correspondence.
Yeah, so this is, you know, 2 years after the, no, 1 year essentially.
May 1st, 2004.
Yeah, about 14 months after the invasion and occupation. It became clear quite quickly. In fact, it was clear before this. There were weapons inspectors on the ground in Iraq in January, February, and March of 2003.
Desperately seeking that pretext.
And they were sent there under the auspices that there are weapons of mass destruction factories and stores and this and that. And they get sent in and they find nothing. And they're literally saying to the U.S. government, like, do you have any more lists of places where you say it is? Because they had irrefutable proof, according to, we know, they kept saying, we know he has these things. Speaking of Saddam Hussein. And if you know that somebody has something, you know it because you know where it is. And if you know where it is, you can tell people it's here. But when they went there, it wasn't there. And these aren't things that you can be like, oh, you know, this is not like a bunch of box of books. You don't just willy-nilly shove a bunch of anthrax, although even anthrax, frankly, is not really a weapon of mass destruction. You can't kill tens of thousands of people with anthrax.
Yeah, you didn't accidentally put the yellow cake uranium in the wrong drawer and
no.
Just forget about it.
And, you know, that's what weapons inspectors do. They can go in, they can see, like, well, this facility has been used for this, or this facility has not been used for this. And they could find nothing. Nothing. In fact, that's what, you know, most of the advocates against the war were saying. Just give the weapons inspectors more time. There's nothing there. Paul Wolfowitz later said that, well, to Vanity Fair magazine, weapons of mass destruction was the sort of the bureaucratic thing that we could all settle on. And of course, that's a limited hangout in defense because it's also the most propagandistic and scariest thing that we could hang our hat on. We all had different agendas. For the neocons, it was, we're going to recreate a completely free market society. That's why we're going to send over like interns from the Heritage Foundation, yeah. And they're going to run like sectors of the economy. And I'm not joking.
And it's incredibly important, too, to know that the context of it, too, was a post 9/11 world where the American public would have been much more susceptible to that,
totally.
Those kinds of fear-mongering
totally.
Arguments than they would be to now or before.
Here is, let's put up
24 episodes on TV at the time.
Colin yeah. Powell first. Colin Powell gets up and supposedly, according to Larry Wilkerson, it was Colin Powell's worst day of his career and Larry Wilkerson's. Mm-hmm. Because he sort of knew he was lying. It's never been really clear to me how much he knew he was lying. But there's George Tenet behind him. And also, I think that's Elliot Abramson, right? I think so, behind him. Another ghoul. I'm not sure about that, but that's definitely George Tenet, who is the CIA chief, basically just making sure that Powell is going to deliver exactly what he wants. You can't see it. He's holding a vial in his hand. Incidentally, it's just powder. This is like talcum powder. Here, go ahead.
Teaspoonful of this deadly material. And that is my third point, and it is key. The Iraqis have never accounted for all of the biological weapons they admitted they had, and we know they had. They have never accounted for all the organic material used to make them, and they have not accounted for many of the weapons filled with these agents, such as their R-400 bombs. This is evidence, not conjecture. This is true. This is all well documented. Dr. Blix told this council that Iraq has provided little evidence to verify anthrax production and no convincing evidence of its destruction. It should come as no shock, then, that since Saddam Hussein forced out the last inspectors in 1998, we have amassed much intelligence indicating that Iraq is continuing to make these weapons. One of the most worrisome things that emerges from the thick intelligence file we have on Iraq's biological weapons.
Couple of things. shortly after 9/11, there was these anthrax scares that somebody was sending anthrax through the mail. And they had to shut down Congress at one point, or congressional offices, and there was a real concern about it. Again, anthrax can kill 10 people in a room or something, but this is not a weapon of mass destruction. Tens of thousands of people. That's why he's harping on the anthrax there. And all they said, that we don't have evidence of what they did with these things. They knew for a fact that Iraq had weapons. And the reason why we knew for a fact that they did have them at one point was because we gave them to them. You can see pictures of Donald Rumsfeld shaking Saddam Hussein's hand. Back when we were supplying Iraq with these weapons to fight against Iran.
Yeah. Anti-communist push.
Not so much anti-communist, anti-Iran. I mean, this, you got to remember, this is after the hostages. We'll get to that later. But, and we knew that they had those weapons, but they were old, if they existed anymore. They hadn't been used, which more or less they were used against the Kurds too, ultimately. So we knew that they were there, but Colin Powell knew he was lying. And it was just to scare everybody. And it sort of worked. Not so much at the UN, but certainly with the American public. Colin Powell, a lot of people said, well, if Colin Powell is saying this.
He knew that, though. I mean, he knew about his own credibility.
Of course.
That's why it's the worst day of his life or his career. Because
I feel so sorry for him.
I'm so sorry that you knowingly laundered your credibility for war crimes.
Yep. And here is a George W. Bush. And this is how serious he took that search. We should say that Colin Powell died, I guess, 2 years ago. I guess it was during COVID, so it didn't really get the attention that one would have imagined, but probably for the best. I would hate him to have been venerated.
Rip Bozo.
Here is George W. Bush at... at the correspondence dinner. Now, you know, you're supposed to make jokes if you show up there as president, which I get. But remember, you're en route to killing at least a couple hundred thousand innocent civilians, at least displacing millions of people. And here's the way that George Bush is going to deal with this little pesky thing. Pesky thing about those weapons of mass destruction.
Those weapons of mass destruction got to be somewhere. Nope, no weapons over there.
Imagine being in Iraq.
Maybe under here.
There he is.
Yeah, I mean, like, what's even grosser is who's laughing along with that. The people in the room. The press.
Oh, yeah. It was
gross. The people who helped launder this illegal invasion.
Horrible.
And war.
Horrible. Here, yeah. Lastly, let's just play this last thing as long as we're doing this. Bernie Sanders was, at that time, in the House, independent from Vermont congressman, on with former Senator George Allen. George Allen was the guy who was going to win the 2008 presidential race, I think it was, but for the fact that he called a tracker, a word called mukaka, which turned out to be essentially the N-word, used by French Algerians as a slur in Algeria. And his mother was a French Algerian. And I believe he may have lived there, but he certainly knew what that referred to. And that ended up ruining his presidential campaign. Now, I mean, just contemplate this. The guy says, Oh, look at the old, Mukaka over there pointing. That ends the most prominent guy's campaign. Can you imagine the Republicans disqualifying someone today for that?
Cancel culture.
Absolutely not. Absolutely, positively not.
Unless it was like Nikki Haley or something.
Unless it was somebody that they really wanted to get rid of. But here is Bernie Sanders and George Allen.
The matter is that our allies now in that region, Pakistan, Turkey, Egypt, those countries say, don't do it. It would cause chaos in the region. The truth of the matter is, in my view, the happiest guy in the world would be Osama bin Laden if the United States waged a unilateral invasion of Iraq, because he would have more recruits for terrorism against this country that he could ever use.
But we're not going to go in unilaterally.
Who are we going in with?
All right. So far, we have Britain, Portugal.
Portugal.
Spain,
well, that's good.
Italy, Bulgaria. Well, no.
Bulgaria. All right. That's.
Well, you know why Bulgaria? Look on a map. Obviously, Turkey's important. But for tactical airstrikes, we already have. And in the Middle East area, we have Kuwait, Qatar. Saudi Arabia may not fight in it, but it will allow us to use their bases. Egypt. And I think what the president is doing is building a case to enforce the resolutions before the UN Security Council.
Now, what the president is saying, this is what the president is saying.
We're not going in unilaterally.
The president is saying,
if we do go in.
The president is saying, look, if the United Nations wants to come along, that's great. But we are going to do it, and we'll pick up a few people along the way.
Because he believes it's in our vital interest, sir. And let me suggest one of the...
Sir, if it's in our vital interest...
Sir, how dare you, sir? That's 5 months before the... That's in October of 2002. So you understand how relentless this was. And they called it the Coalition of the Willing. And, like, you know, they were, like, so excited.
As opposed to the Coalition of the Unwilling?
Exactly. So excited with every...
Every country that
would, like, even argue, like, well, we'll sign up. We're not going to send anything. All right.
Except for those.
Good luck.
Yep.
Pussies in France.
Yep. All right. We may have somebody on to talk about this a little more tomorrow, but we're going to head into the fun half. Number is 646-257-3920 is the number. Folks, this show relies on your support. We're not quite having an ad apocalypse, but we are, I mentioned a while back and I thought it would be fixed. But it doesn't look like it's going to go in that direction. That is the dynamic advertising is when been like the new sort of thing happening in podcasts. And, I don't want to do dynamic advertising, largely because we don't have control of the ad inventory and what companies they use and this and this and that. When I read it, I know I've already had the chance to look into it, or I have the chance to look into it later, or it happens. It's attached to the live show. It's baked in. So if there's problems with an advertiser, I can hear from IMers and hear back about it, and I can know where the ad lands before, you know, it goes in. We don't do dynamic advertising on the show. We won't do that. But the problem is that many of the media brokers, that's where they're moving to. So the thing that keeps me from going into a deep, deep panic is our members. So if you have the means, join themajorityreport.com. We will put up a QR code at the break. And you can just click on that. It'll take you right there. When you sign up to become a member, you not only help this show survive and thrive, you also get the free half, free of commercials. Don't have any today. And the fun half, you can IM us. You not only get the fun half, but you can IM us through the app as a member too. So join themajorityreport.com. Also, JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Emma.
Yes.
ESVN.
Today we're going to talk about...
George Allen, do you know his I think his dad owned the Steelers or something like that?
The Steelers?
Really interesting. Well, I mean, Alan wouldn't be the right name for that.
No, it was the Rams. Maybe.
And the Roonies.
It was the Rams.
Oh, the Rams. Yeah. So before sold to Kroenke. We will do all angles of the Aaron Rodgers drama. I also want to talk about some of the backlash to Andrew Wiggins and his leave, as well as March Madness. Bradley's going to give me the rundown on that, and maybe Will will call in and we'll break that down. Incredible upsets. Only the second 16 seed to defeat a 1 seed in the history of the tournament, and it was a Northern New Jersey team. So we'll be talking about that a bit today. YouTube.com/ESPN show at 4 p.m.
Matt.
Yeah, this weekend, patreon.com/leftreckoning. David and I caught up with Jamie Peck about her experience down in Atlanta talking to the Cop City Forest defenders. Tomorrow, we'll be talking to Danny Bessner about fascism. Mm.
It was, George Allen's dad coached.
Oh, coach.
The Washington
gotcha.
Team.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. We'll see you in the fun half. Take some calls.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no. Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare!
Bring back DJ Dennis.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Dennis.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black African. And the alpha males are black. And the Africans are back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Africans are black. Alpha males are black. Africans are back.
Come on!
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total pussy.